The Maya accomplished fantastic things in the 3,000 years of their history. They rose from just a small hunter and gatherer settlement to a village culture, and then they fanned out into the area that you see there on the map that you're holding in your hand, until they had penetrated all of what we call that particular part of Mesoamerica. The map that you have covers this area coming right through here. The segment of this area that we call Mesoamerica really begins right about here in Mexico, and it flows through this direction. During the years that village cultures were growing to full-blown civilizations, there were a number of power structures up in here, very strong city-states. The Olmec over here, Teotihuacan, and the Toltecs up here, and classic Veracruz up here. And these people were pretty much contemporary in the early years of the Maya. In other words, they rolled along together. And they got along somewhat through diplomacy, intermarriage. The women of one group married into the other group. So you had a form of static peace here, which would break open sometimes into a kind of warfare between the groups. And then you would have conflict, and it would settle down again. And during those years that the Maya really flourished, they had accomplished marvelous things. In the world of mathematics, they were the people who first conceived of the idea of zero. They had a calendar system that was accurate down, right down to that extra day that we call leap year. They had a body of astronomical knowledge that allowed them to predict the solstices, the equinox, the various phases of the moon. And in their religious structure, the priests governed the planting of crops, and all of the other rituals were connected in some way or another to the time of the moon. They had two calendar systems, and they dated back to a year that they chose evidently just arbitrarily, 3114 BC, and they measured things from that time. So they were very interesting people, and during their years of what you would call high culture, which was about from 400 AD through 900 AD, they built these marvelous city-states, and in these city-states you had buildings that were complicated buildings, and you knew that there had to have been an artisans group, a group of artists, a group of architects, a group of sculptors. You had to have had a power structure that could draw on all the people for labor. And so you had a very sophisticated society developing. Then, strangely enough, but not so strangely, when you study ancient history, or history that is not too far back, The civilization flowered and it fell. And this happened to the Maya too, in center after center. If you look at that map that you have there, you'll find some little squashed pyramids that look like this. They're a little bit hard to see because there are more maps up here if you don't have them. Would you pass back to anyone else that doesn't have one there? Please, right there. These were the major Maya cities that were contemporary with one another. Every place you see just a plain little dot like that, you have a minor city. And the major cities gained allegiance from the minor cities. And guess why? Why, if you were a minor city, would you want to be under the wing? Beg pardon?
Protection.
Protection, right. Protection, and then the advantages of trade were also preeminent in that relationship, advantages of trade. And so you had the major cities who had the allegiance from the smaller cities, and so you had kind of little unified groups of Maya in various places. Now yesterday we were in Copan. If you look over on the right side of your map there, you're going to be just inside the borders of Honduras. And that's where Copan is. Now, you cut clear across that area, clear across that central area, and you'll find Palenque. You've gone across Guatemala now, and you're into the Chiapas state of Mexico, right in here. And this is a tropical rainforest area. Palenque lies just 50 miles south of this bay up here. And if you look on your map, you can see little dots like this, the little dashes. You're looking at swampland there. So they are really at the very edge of the mountains. The mountains come right up behind them. The Sierra Chiapas come right up behind them. And you have luxuriant growth in that particular area. When the floods come, the land cannot be farmed in the Palenque area. But during the dry season, of course, it's just like our delta areas. It's very fertile. And so they had the advantage of having good cropland a part of the year. They also had natural resources in the forest. If it's a tropical rainforest, you know they had wood, trees. They also had limestone available to them. And they took that lime and they ground it up into a powder and mixed it with water. And this produced the substance that they used to make the stucco figures that you'll see when you look at Palenque's structures today. And they were fantastic craftsmen in the art of sculpture. Well, let's see, what else do I want to tell you about Palenque before we go there? This is what the site looks like. Do you people that are familiar with the Maya, can you add anything to what we've said here about the Maya as a culture?
Well, just a general impression is they seem to be so refined. They don't seem to be as rough as Tikal. Am I right about that?
Yes, you're right about that. Tikal, of course, had a very long history. It had a very long history. And there are refinements there, too. But somehow, they seem more like an aggressive people. But the Maya were aggressive. And they were not this nice little peace-loving group that just sat around in their rocking chairs, you know, being nice to everyone. They went out and took captives and sacrificed them. They also sacrificed retainers to go with their lords when the lords died. And I remember saying the other day that after I got home from visiting or working in places like this, you have this feeling, these are God's children, you see, just like we are. And I'd read the Old Testament and I think, well, they were doing it back then. Too, you see. And so you have to realize that what they did, they were doing because they thought it was the right thing to do. And that's about all you can say about it.
Mm-hmm. The limestone, you said that they had access to limestone, which they made the structures from. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that isn't the limestone typically located more in the southern part of this Yucatan area.
You see, now your Yucatan is that big hump that you see
up here.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't the limestone more from this mountainous area in the southern area?
No, that was not so much limestone. You need to go north here. Find Palenque.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned that, though, because that reminds me that you need to look for rivers. You find Usumacinta there,
which rises way over here in the Sierra. just find the river that you see flowing into the Bay of Campeche there. Now chase it back to its origin. And you'll see that there is another word there, the Pasión River, is in there. Then if you come from the other direction, they had the Motagua that could furnish transport for them. This was very important to the rise of these cities, because it's pretty hard to hack your way through the jungle, but it's fairly simple to get into the canoe to go visit somebody over there, if you only have to portage across a small area of land. And we're talking, if you look at the mileage chart down below, we're not talking vast distances there. But no, they got what they needed by trading for it. Mm-hmm. And the limestone, there is limestone in this area, okay, where Palenque is. But you have to go up toward the mountains to get it. Now, I don't know about limestone down here. I've never heard of that. But that could be.
To me, that was all part of just how incredible it is that at that time they don't have trucks and trains to haul this incredible amount of limestone to build these.
And you may have put your finger here on another thing that contributed to the fall and decline of the people. The constant demands that were made on the peasant class and the class of farmers to feed, to work, you see. And those demands would rankle after a while if you couldn't ever catch up. It's just like the wood choppers out here. I was talking to some of them and I said, well, you look like you've been doing a dirty job. And he said, we've been chopping wood. And I said, well, how are you coming with the chopping? Well, there's a big batch left back here, you see. And so that demand for labor became almost unacceptable to them. And you may have there one of the seeds of the decline of the culture. Trade was disrupted too. And then the Chantal Maya were up here and they could see that the power was waning in some of these cities. And just, you know, they just pounced right down there and that was it. Now, did we get off the subject here? We do need to talk a little bit about the decline of the Maya, and you have mentioned one thing here. You see, this demand for labor, the demand for the production of food, the demographics changed. Many people, you see, as the civilization flowered, there were many more people to treat. And so, and then you had this business of invasion, that kind of thing. But by 799, this place was abandoned. It was abandoned. They just went off and left it. And the Chantal Maya came down from the north and helped along those who hadn't already gone, you see. So it's very strange when you consider that all those little squash pyramid places seem to decline and fall at about the same time. Well, let's go to Palenque so that we don't forget what we're up to here. And here is the site, and you can spot it on the map there. You know where you are. You're in Mexico, you're in Chiapas, and you're just at the place where the plains and the mountains meet. And these things are trees. It's supposed to be trees around here. This is only a small portion of Palenque, but it's what they call the central site. There are hundreds of mounds. If you go up back here and take a trail that goes up here, now there are lots of snakes around here, people. This is a snaky country. And you have to whistle and make lots of noise. But if you go up this trail, it rises very rapidly. And you're in the midst of a jungle that has liana, and you can hear the various tropical birds chirping at you. And they don't chirp, they yell at you. And so you are in the tropical jungle, and where they have cut it away, it's nice and grassy and beautiful. You come in from this direction. I'm just going to show this to you, and then I'm going to take you on the trip along here. But I want you to know where you're going. You come up this path, and the first thing you see is this magnificent building called the Temple of the Inscriptions.
And this is a place where they found a tomb that was really most unusual. And it was found in 1948 by a man named Ruse. And he was inside the temple, and he had been working on the excavation and restoration of the area. And he noticed these strange plugs in the floor, and you'll see them on one of the slides that I'll show you. And he had been wondering what they were, and he decided he's going to find out. So he pulled them out and peeked down in there, and he could see that below that floor up here, whoops, that's the roof comb, below the floor up here, there seemed to be a stairway with fill in it. So they lifted this slab, and they began the removal of the rubble that was in there, and it took them 4 years to do it. It's very hot here, people, and it's very humid. If you look at your latitude line there, we're in the tropics, and we're at 600 feet altitude, and it's very hot. But they would take some pieces out, and it was difficult work, and it was dark, and it was the temperature was formidable here. And so they could only work a short time. So year after year after year, he kept at it. Until on the fourth year, he got to this level down here. You can go down here now. Have any of you been to Palenque? Did you go down?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a creepy place to go down. You have to have a flashlight, and it's slippery, and it's dark, and you think, my, I hope there's going to be something really good down here. But you just keep going. And finally, you get down to this level. And you keep in mind the workmen were doing this too. And when you get to this level, it kind of levels off. And the tomb that they found was the tomb of Lord Pikal. And it had not been looted, it had not been discovered. It was just the way it was put in there. And so they peeked through this area. First they found some people. I can't remember whether it was two or three retainers that had been sacrificed to go with their Lord on his journey to the next world, which is always something that bothers me, but they did that. And so you get to peek in this little hole here, and you can imagine this ruse, because that had been there undisturbed. It was, Pikal lived from someplace to 683, it seems to me, 12. He lived a very long life. And this place was built before he died, for his tomb. And there was a slab in there, and it was stalactites and stalagmites all over the place, and it was just otherworldly. And in the center, they saw this square, or rectangular thing. And there was a 12-foot-long slab of rock that was here, intricately carved, and it showed Pikal falling down to the earth monster at the moment of his death. And they raised this very carefully. It weighed 5 tons. So they had to bring the equipment down. Naturally, you can't just pitch that up. And under there, they found this burial. Much jade, many pieces of pottery, also scattered around the tomb itself here, or the burial spot. They found a beautiful stucco head, which they have decided was a figure that represented Pikal in his youth. Much jade, and the skeleton had a jade mask that was made up of over 200 pieces. And you may have read about a mask being stolen from the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico. Any of you read about that?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It was that mask.
Was that one?
Mm-hmm. That was stolen.
Has it been found?
No, but I'll bet you it's hot property.
What?
Hot property. They'll never be able to sell it, will they?
Mm-hmm.
No. And so there he was, and it was a find, and not too long ago when you consider 1948. So, that's right now under this place, the Temple of the Inscription. These are unreconstructed, or unrestored. Part of the earth has been scraped away, but there's no reconstruction has been done there. This is the palace, and it's a central spot. It covers what would amount to one city block. So it's a huge complex. There have been many restorations and superimpositions here, one on top of the other. They remodeled a lot. This was a residence. It has galleries, it has servants' quarters, it has a tower in the center that they think might have been an observatory. It has a great and magnificent stairway. And as you come in, you can see these temples. These three temples were constructed by Pakal's son, Shambhala. And he saw to the building of these temples. This one, I don't have a very good photograph of, but it's strange. I walked in there just at twilight, the first time I was here, and I sat on the mound. This is only partially released from the earth. And it is a spiritual place. It really is, because you're sitting on this area, you're looking toward these other structures that you know were built to glorify what they believed in. Then up here you have an older area. They call this the Temple of the Count because there was the count that came and did a little work here, and he lived in that place. So they named it after him. There are unreconstructed ball courts, and then there's a north group that's very old. Now, Palenque's history doesn't go back as far as Copan. Remember I told you that Copan goes back to 1500 BC. They have not found anything here in this area. Now, you have to understand they haven't dug everything up around there yet. That goes back farther than about 300 AD. So the people that came here probably were someplace else first. And the deepest roots are in Belize, this little country that used to be British Honduras, right here. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to walk up this path. We're going to go into this building. We're going to take a look at the palace over our left shoulder. And then we're going to go walking around up in here. This is your river, the stream. And when you're here, you usually sit down. You remember it's very hot. Sit down here and put your feet in this. And then you go up a very high platform. These are artificial sort of hillocks that these things have been reconstructed on. There's an aqueduct here. Way back when, they had an aqueduct to bring water to the palace. These are just linear mounds. If you've ever seen linear mounds, that's what they are up here. And there's a little museum up there about where the microphone is, which you can see. Okay, I'll try to remember to tell you some things about these structures as we get to them. And there's that path that leads past the Temple of the Inscriptions. You can see the two unexcavated or partially excavated mounds just west of the Temple of the Inscriptions. That's not a formidable pitch to go up. But if stairs bother you, there is a little path that goes around behind. And the Temple of the Inscriptions has been built into a hill. Now, I've done it both ways, but I like going around back because you go in through part of the rainforest. What you're seeing directly ahead is the Temple of the Cross, the one that's up higher there on the hill. The palace is at the left. You're closer now to the Temple of the Inscriptions, and you'll see that there's a difference in the stairway. The stairway, when this was a functioning pyramid, was that wide part. When they reconstructed it and restored it, they made it narrower. They think that there may have been one stairway on top of another one anyway, and that the original stairway was a narrow one, and the wider one had been put on top of it. This was very common with the cultures of this time. When a cycle ended, or when the length of time that a ruler reign ended at his death or for some other reason, they would build another temple on top of the first one. And sometimes there are as many as 11 superimpositions, one on top of the other. Now over here to the left you see the palace, and you can see that there are different levels here. there are what you call basement levels. And it's a very complex building. You can wander around in it and try to figure out how you're going to get out. You see the broad stairway there, and try to imagine people going up that, dignitaries coming to visit in the regalia that they wore when they went to visit someone all dressed up. In the center is this four-story tower, unique to the Maya people. That's the only one I've ever seen. And you can get up there. There's kind of a stairway that goes all the way up. Kind of creepy, but did you go up there, Ralph?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
You just say to yourself, I'm going to go up this thing because I want to see what it's like. Now you see the sweep of the building. There are galleries on each side. There's another construction just like this, just beyond that, to the east. We're looking at the west gallery here. Doesn't it look as though it's been remodeled a number of times and changed? It was residential. They think that the reigning lords and their retinue lived in this place, and probably also priests. Look to the right there, past the base of the Temple of the Inscriptions, which is what you see on the right. And you see this beautiful Temple of the Sun with its roof comb, which is now just a ruin. But those roof combs were painted, painted oftentimes in blue or red or cream. And to the left you see the Temple of the Cross. You can't see, unless you know what you're looking for, the Temple of the Foliated Cross, which is really directly back. And there's that strange little subterranean looking thing from the palace. Now you're looking at the Temple of the Inscriptions straight on. It once had a roof comb, but all you can see are just the little pieces sticking up that once held it at the top. The front was all stucco. Those panels between the doors had figures of the kings. And notice the width of the stairway at the bottom, which they think was the last stairway. And over at the right, the little building or structure that has not been attended to. This is an 8-step pyramid. If you count the platform that the temple is on, you get 9. And 9 was a number that was significant for the Maya. You get some idea of perspective there when you see the people. You see how big the building is. Now I'm going around to the path that goes behind it. You can see that it's built into the hill, I hope. And on your way up, you see this luxuriant foliage. And you think, I'd love to have that in my living room, you know, you buy those things. You can look down on that unrestored pyramid over here, and there was a coral snake lying in there, dead as could be. But it was evidence that there was something you needed to be careful of if you were going to go prowling around on the back paths. This is the floor I told you about. We're inside the Temple of the Inscriptions at the platform level. And you wonder why somebody had been curious about those things before, don't you? In the background, you have glyph panels. This is a large wall of glyphs. And they have found, now that they can read them, that they give the relationship of the royal family to his mythological ancestors. It's his genealogy and the genealogy of his family, which establishes his right to rule. I just imagine them pulling out these plugs, getting rid of that big thing, and going down into that place that I told you about here. I didn't take any photographs down in there. I didn't take a camera down in there. Did you, Ralph?
No. I think I do have one picture that was illuminated from when this...
You just went down?
Yeah.
Did you know what you were going to find when you got there?
No, not really. I had a little guidebook, but it wasn't...
If you go to Palenque, you must go down there, and don't be afraid. You can take, always you set your own pace and you can make it where you want to go. This is the glyph panel. It's eroded badly, but at certain times of the day when the shadows are just right on there, because light comes in through those open porticos there.
I don't think I was even aware of that. Isn't that funny?
Yes. Well, it's... You have to know what you're looking for,
yeah.
Really. And that they can now read these glyphs. This complicated system of writing, at which the Maya were experts, allowed them to express the most complicated thoughts that they had. And you look at this and you think, how could they do that with those things? But they could, and they have now established that those stand for phonemes, some of those little configurations, which when you put them together make words, just like astrology, astroanalogy. See? So they have found that that's what you do. You put these phonemes together and construct words, and there it is. We're looking now out over that plain, that Tabasco plain that is swampy, and notice how flat it is. It's flat 50 miles into the Campeche Bay. It just goes straight off. And you are just at the base of the rising Poop Mountains, which are behind the Temple of the Inscription. And can you see the encroaching forest there? If they don't keep cutting it back, it just gobble up the whole thing again, just like it did in the
800s. That's in the middle of the jungle. It's really kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. We're looking down on the palace now, and you can see the east and west galleries there. They are built exactly alike. And you can see that there were once apartment sections in there. And you can see there's a kind of a walkway along there through that gallery. There is an altar in the second flight of steps there. It's important to keep in mind too that plain that stretches out there. And you can see the north group beyond the roof of the palace. And not too much has been done with it. But the thing that was interesting to me was that when you went in and out of those small structures, there was always a cartouche with glyphs in it, which you are told represents something about the people who once lived in that place. This is a beautiful sight. It's my favorite of all, simply because it's so pleasing to the eye. It is quiet. And it is there's a serenity to it that you don't find in Tikal. And Copan compares very well with it. But this one is quietly beautiful. And the stucco figures are fluid in their design. You realize that many years went into the kind of skill that produced those stuccos. This is the path behind the Temple of the Inscriptions. And I went up this way and I went in a little ways as where you see unrestored mounds, just trees tearing them apart. But it goes quite a distance up into the mountains. This is that gallery that you can walk through. The Maya used what you call a corbel arch. They didn't know the true arch. To make an arch, do you know what a corbel arch is? I don't want to insult you.
No.
Okay. What they do, they lay the stones farther and farther. They overlap them farther and farther until they get to the place where they can put a capstone on it. And somehow the stresses are right. I'm not an engineer and I don't know why it works, but it does, because that's the kind of arch that is used throughout the Maya world. You can see this gallery better. This is the East Gallery, and I was there. This is a morning photo. In the background, to the left, you're looking at the back part of the Temple of the Cross. That first one that's up on rather a high hill. We're inside the East Gallery, which is the gallery that has the most appeal, I think, to people because it holds so much history. And it also has examples of the stonework that the people did and the stucco work that they did. You'll see various figures around there. Can you see them? They're little kind of upended rectangles. Those are all carved. And those represent rulers of Palenque. There are several of them that represent captive figures, people that have been taken for sacrifice. The Maya were not peace-loving people, necessarily. You can see remnants of the stucco up there on the roof. You can also see remnants of the roof cone that must have been up on top of that. What do you call that kind of a roof?
Mansard.
Oh, what?
Mansard.
Mansard roof, thank you. And here, these are just side by side in here. This is a cartouche that's a little enclosed group of four glyphs there that represent the genealogy of this person over here, who is a ruler. Now you can see he's not a captive because he's not bound. And he's wearing a headdress, so you know that he's a significant figure. More glyph panels in there. And also notice how the vegetation is still working. And it continues to work. And they pluck it out and it grows back. This, of course, is badly eroded, but you can see in the panel that at one time there was a headdress, see it up at the top? And this was a person, a representation of a person there. And all of these panels are decorated that way in stucco. And if you have a good imagination and you just sit down there and close your eyes for a minute, you can imagine what a magnificent place that courtyard was. Now this one is in a little bit better shape. Can you see his feet? Mm-hmm. Down at the bottom there? And the regalia that he's wearing? You wish you could do something to stop time there from doing its work. It's the humidity, and that's one reason that they have had such a hard time with residential segments, because in that climate, things that are perishable perish. This is a captive, a bound captive, and evidently this represents a lord who was taken captive. He wouldn't be in here if he weren't a lord, and he's to be sacrificed. These people we know are rulers because of what they're wearing. The captive had no headdress. He was a bound captive. But he's in this court because he was a royal lineage. Another figure of a ruler along with his genealogy. This stairway is a hieroglyphic stairway. And this tells the story of Lord Pikal and his son, and connects their existence to the gods, and it is their right to rule. There are some little features here I want you to be sure and see. Wherever you see these dots like this, they represent 1 year. I'm trying to find one that has a bar in it. Because the bar represents 5 years, the dot represents one, and I don't see them. This is a badly eroded stairway. But you have to keep in mind how old it is, 1,000 years old, and exposed to the weather, and the craftsmanship that produced that. Must have been something.
Are they trying to in some way preserve it with some preservatives, or do they just leave it?
I don't know. Now, in Copan, they're thinking of removing all the stela and taking them to the museum and just putting concrete replicas. And I just have reservations about that. I think that people who take the time and the energy to go there should see the real thing. But there is the other side of the coin, too. This will be gone eventually. You see, when it was covered with the jungle and with soil and with growth, it was somewhat protected. But now it's exposed to the elements. And you wonder, 1,000 years down the road, what will be left. Yeah. I think all they're doing, Ralph, is just trying to keep the jungle from eating it up. This is a path. You leave that gallery, and you're going up this path, and you're going to go over to the temple areas. But before we do, we're going to go to one of these little subterranean chambers, and that door doesn't open. But isn't that a strange configuration in the door? You peek in, and all you can see is darkness. And I've never been able to find out what on earth was ever in there. Notice on the right, can you see carving around the door? And they tell us that once that went all the way around and framed that door. Evidently, that chamber in there had some significance insofar as their religion was concerned. They think priestly rites were conducted in there. You come out from that area through this place that is almost tunnel-like. You can go past here and you can come out over here. And here is a bench. This is called Lord Pikal's bench because his name is on there. And I don't know whether he was the only one that got to sit there or, but that's what they call it. And if you came down these steps now, you would go across that little river and up to the three temples. This is Lord Pikal's bench. One of those is his sign, and I'm not sure which one it is. But again, you see the three little dots over there. Those are years. That particular glyph represents some element of time. That's just on the inside of that wall. That's a look into that kind of a subterranean corridor there. You can see a corner of the bench. Up on the wall, on one of the inside rooms, there's some original color. And so we know that many of these interior segments were painted. Red was a favorite color. And there was once a very complicated design that encircled that medallion type thing. Here also, there are just the remains of a scene there. But they're very proud of this, and this is pointed out to you that this represents some of the original color. Another example of their stucco. I don't know whether I told you, there are guards in this place. They're almost invisible. They're not wearing uniforms, but they are there. And so you're not going to pick up a piece of stucco and run off with it. Of course, you wouldn't, but some might. Now we're going up that little path toward the north group. You can see in the background the Temple of the Inscriptions. And you see why I say it's very pleasing to the eye? It's almost park-like. And they have, those are planted trees there. And they are planted for shelter. There are little benches under some of them where you can sit down and take a breather. I have been there at various times of the day. My favorite time of the day is in the evening after most of the people are gone. This is the Temple of the Count. This is the place where the man came and did some work and messed up some things, too, because he hadn't really researched what he ought to be doing. They think that there's a burial under there, but they have never gone down or tunneled in to find out. These are those little decrepit buildings in the north group, which are very old. They go back farther than 400, but not very far. They're interesting to me simply because of what they represent, I think. You can imagine that they were beautiful. Can you see little semblances of stairways there? That if they dug that all off, they're going to find remnants of probably a tiered approach to that building. That's just inside of one of the walls. And again, that series of whisks represents the people who lived there and who built that place. See how the lichens are working on the rock over there? You can see the whole complex kind of spread out before you there now. You see the lower parts of the palace that haven't all been pulled out of the earth there? These are the unrestored ball courts. All of the Maya sites have ball courts, and the significance of the game differed from one place to another and from one situation to another. You're sure that sometimes it must have been played just for fun, but sometimes it was very serious business. And the loser, the captain of the losing team, became the sacrificial victim. There is a magazine here that you're welcome to borrow. In fact, I think it's right there. It says, A Solemn and Something Kind of Game. And it gives you an overview of how the game was played in the various Mesoamerican cities. Another ball court. There were two of them here, and they haven't dug into either one of them. But if they took earth off from there, they'd probably find something somewhat like we saw at Copan. You know, there'd be either perpendicular walls or there'd be a slanting wall. There are little pieces of things lying around, too, that you know belong to something, but what? In the background, you see another temple structure that has not been released from its mound. It's interesting to see, though, because you know what it must have looked like before they cleared it away. Over on your right there, you're seeing a section of the Temple of the Cross, and you can see that it's built on an artificial terrace. The structure on the right is the Temple of the Sun that I told you that I sat down on and on the little section in the front. And that little area has you feel like it's a place for meditation when you sit down there, particularly if you're there when there aren't too many people. And you're not seeing a lot of people, are you? See how the forest encroaches on the site. And the foliated cross, Temple of the Foliated Cross back there, they have to keep cutting the jungle back. There are people working there. There is a little river that runs through the site. Remember I showed you that? Sometimes they say it's quite full, and sometimes it's low. Right now, it is a little bit low. It's very cold, the water. It comes from the spring. Do you see the air plants growing on the side of that tree? They grow on wires. Everything grows. It just keeps growing and growing because of the humidity. This is an aqueduct, and it doesn't chill very well unless it's quite dark. But they had an aqueduct to carry water to the palace. In the palace, they had steam baths. And they got their water from that little stream, and it went through this aqueduct to the palace.
Now, do you see these people down there with their feet in the water? Everybody does it because you're very hot. And this is quite a steep climb. You're going up to the Temple of the Cross, which has about four superimpositions, one thing built on top of another, or some kind of remodeling going on. And the roof palm, you have to imagine that it was once painted. So you make your way up there, but before you do that, you sit with your feet in the water a little while, and drop a little on your head, and then you're ready to go. She's drinking from the stream. I wasn't that brave. Now you can see that it looks as though it has been built onto, right? When you go inside, there's a stucco and carved panel that again is a monument to the ancestry of Shun the Lam. And here it is. And there he is. And the story is told on either side. There's always a maze, representation of the maze god, too, someplace in here. And I don't think I got it. It's over to this side. I want you to see that there are two people in here. Can you see this one asking for something from this one? Can you see that? Okay. Hard to take a photo in there because it's dark, and if you use the flash, it wipes it out. So those are things you need to see in the book. Can you see the pitch of that that artificial terrace there? It's quite high. When you get back to the one that is in the background there, there's another panel that is carved with glyphs and also figures. And this is my sorriest photo, and I felt so sad about this because this was my favorite place. This is the Temple of the Sun, and it is a beautiful building. They have only released it from its earth mound on one side. They have left this one just as it was. But the stucco panels are just a marvel of construction. Well, I went back to the palace, and I decided I was going to climb that thing. And you had to go across a little narrow walkway like this. Do you remember that, Ralph?
Not particularly.
Yeah, just kind of a little thing, and I looked at it and I thought, I don't know. And then I thought, well, maybe you'll never be here again. So away I went.
I was a bag of mine. I met a German fellow who had a little more pursuit.
I think I just did this about the first time I was there was the time I climbed the tower, and I think that was probably about 1983. This place grows on you. In the forest, back of the Temple of the Inscriptions area, there is a group of people called the Lekandanis. And they still live. I'll bet some of you read about them. Have you read about them?
I remember seeing these people. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they dress just like you're seeing here. They have maintained their culture. And they have done it with great difficulty, because they are the people of the mahogany forests. And the roads keep coming in, and the trees keep coming down. And these people are trying to hang on to their little piece of the world there. And what they're doing here is selling bows and arrows. And the person that you see over there to the right, with the person that I've traveled with a great deal in the Latin American countries. Goodbye, Palenque.